Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And great to be with you on this Monday, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. It'll take care of all of your insurance needs. And make sure they save you money wherever they can. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we are in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Todd, happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday. Are you recovered from your long trip?
Yeah, it was an interesting little odyssey. But you know what? I mean, nobody complained about it. Everybody knew there's nothing you could do about it. So I've spent 9 of the last 12 days on the road. And that's fine. We're here all week. So that's good. Got a game on Wednesday night at 6:30. We're on at 6. And then go to Purdue Friday night. And got that game with Zach Edey and the crew on Saturday afternoon. So, you know, go from there.
At least it looked like it was going to be much worse until the second half yesterday.
Well, it actually started with about 4 minutes to go in the first half. They clamped down defensively where Michigan did not get a basket in the final 4:46 of the first half. Didn't get a basket. So when you do that, you keep yourself in the game. And you can't keep... I mean, they were in 60 minutes of basketball between Michigan State and Michigan. In the first half of Michigan, they were 5 of 42 in threes. I mean, that's hard to do. I mean, do you know how hard it is to miss that many shots?
I mean, just the law of averages, they'd have to make more in the second half,
right?
I would think.
Right. So 5 of 42 between Michigan State and Michigan. So 60 minutes. You're like, ay, ay, ay. Well, when you're coming back in a game like, what you need is quite simple. At some point, you need to take the lead. You can't just tie the game, because if they get a basket, now you're behind again. Or a free throw, you're behind again. You can't just get to within one or two, they get a basket, now you fall back and you're now 4 or 5 back, right? You have to actually take the lead. And that's what they did. They kept playing terrific defense against an excellent offensive team. Michigan is 24th in the nation out of 363 in offensive efficiency. 24th. And Penn State kept playing great defense, turned them over left and right yesterday. What a difference that made. The number of turnovers in the game. And that turned out to be critical to them winning the game, because I mean, they just kept Michigan off balance the entire time. And that's, you know, and they couldn't get into their offense. And it's not just, hey, great, they were able to keep them off balance. It's more than that, Todd. When you're sitting there and you are harassing them enough where they're not starting their offense until there's 15 to 20 seconds. They're starting their offense at 15 to 20 seconds. And yesterday, Penn State created 19 turnovers. Okay, 19 turnovers. And Penn State scored 23 points off the turnovers. Michigan, conversely, Penn State only turned it over 7 times, and Michigan had 6 points off of turnovers. So Penn State was a plus 17 on points off of turnovers in the game. And it's the defense that kept them in it. Now, that is the Ace Baldwin that we all thought we were going to see when he committed to Penn State. What a game he played. Right? Somebody said to me afterward, he played a good game. I'm like, good game? What game were you watching? I mean, he took Doug McDaniel out of his game almost completely, where he was really not much. I mean, he had the ball a lot, but was not much of a factor. Had 25 himself. There was plus 14 scoring on him yesterday. He had 4 assists. McDaniel had 5. Baldwin played a superior game yesterday. 8 of 13 from the field. 9 of 10 at the line. Just a great game. His defense was fabulous in the game yesterday. He ended up with 3 steals. Penn State had 11 steals in the game. And again, defense. They finally then hit shots. And in the second half of the game, remember, after Penn State had hit 5 of their previous 42 shots from 3, in the second half yesterday, they were 5 of 10. What a difference that makes. I mean, you're talking about all-around shooting. In the second half, Penn State shot 55%, 5 of 10 from 3, 15 of 17 at the free throw line yesterday. I mean, Penn State averaged yesterday 1.625 points per possession in the second half. 1.625. That's phenomenal. And Michigan for the game, which came in at 1.1 plus, only averaged 1 point per possession yesterday. That was it. 1 point per possession for the game. And that's way off what they usually do. Way off. And so the last 24 minutes of defense, superior. The last, and then offensively, the last 20 minutes, outstanding. Once they got the lead, they never relinquished it. And as I said at halftime, and then actually it was in the first half. It was late in the first half. I said, look, Dick, they need to get within 5 by the under 12. I said, they can get the lead. This crowd will carry them home. Crowd carried them home. I mean, the crowd carried them home. They were great yesterday. That's the way it should be. Everybody in the building, on top of the court. I mean, if you have any experience in the palestra, you'll know what I mean by this. Okay, the corners. Okay, the corners. When you look at the palestra and the corners are filled, you have a crowd. I mean, and the corners were filled yesterday. It makes all the difference in the world. Now, because once Penn State got the lead, they never relinquished it. The closest Michigan got was 4 after Penn State built a 7, because Penn State went on that run. 3-pointer up 2, 3-pointer up 5, 2-pointer up 7. From that point on, the closest Michigan got was 4.
Do you think the transfer portal and kind of building the team through, you know, they had to kind of build the team on the fly, that this just might be the point where the light's gone on and they're kind of used to each other and kind of getting into a flow together right now?
You know, sometimes, Todd, you don't know. Sometimes you don't know. What you don't have is a continuity in culture. That you don't have. That's where, when you're recruiting a lot of your players and they get ingrained in your culture, they then tell the transfers what the culture is like. There's nobody here that can do that. So you've had to start from scratch there. I think it's a continuous work in progress. You've had guys that have been hurt. And, you know, I'm around it in practice every day, and I'm going to go to practice this afternoon when the show's over with. And it took a little bit for Kanye and Ace to work together, but they are. Well, Hobb has played well. I mean, he's done a good job. They still, I mean, Hicks shows flashes. They need consistency out of Hicks. Dunn has been terrific off the bench. Kern is the ultimate program guy. Gotta love him. O'Boyle is another great guy, but you know he's got to hit threes to on the floor to make a big difference. But he made a couple of smart plays yesterday. The shot by Dunn that put him in front was, you know, he helped make that play happen. There are other guys that are struggling. I mean, IRA's really been struggling. You know, I got too many fans are like, wait till what? I mean, I'm at practice every day. I'm waiting. I'm glad from 30,000 feet you see something I don't see from 12. But you know he's got a of course he's been hurt, but I mean to be honest with you, he's got to get himself going. How about that? I mean, because he's not even remotely close to get going right now. But I think they've kind of settled into, I'd say, the eight guys they know that are going to play, and then you have to then say who's the ninth guy that's the backup five guy, and it was Demetrius Lillie yesterday. We only got 2 minutes. He and Jameel Brown got 2 minutes apiece yesterday. That was it. But you know what? It was a game where a couple things happened. Number one, they did not let Michigan State, which was just, let's face it, you can use whatever negative adjective you want to use about describing that game, and that's fine. But you can't let one game like that become two, and they didn't. Number two, both teams walked into the game 1-2 on the conference season. Only one was going to walk out at 2-2. And it turned out it was Penn State that walked out at 2-2 yesterday. So that's big. So the bottom line on Thursday night is Michigan State ended up counting for one game, one loss. Did it matter it was 31 or whether it was 8 points? I mean, in the end, did it really matter? No, it's one loss. They didn't compound it. Then they go out and they get a win. And that's exactly what they needed. They needed to go out and get a win, and they did. And the crowd was just tremendous yesterday. You know, and look, the game they played now, they played in there. They played Iowa, Michigan State, Purdue, which was number one in the country, and Michigan in there. They played three Big Ten games in there now. You're 3-1 in those games. It really has been a great home court advantage because the fans are right on top of the game. They're right. I mean, that's what makes an older place like this so terrific, is that the way it's configured, it's great for basketball. You know, it's one thing about the newer arenas are nice, but everybody, even Nebraska, which is a terrific arena, it's like the end zones are a little further back. There's space behind us because we're courtside in Nebraska. There's space behind us where the fans are. They're a little further removed than people realize at these newer arenas. Here, man, they're right on top of what's going on. And I think that's what makes it a fun atmosphere to be a part of. And, and the building's naturally loud to begin with. And I know people talk about Rec Hall a lot. Rec Hall is not, it's the same designer of the Palestra and Rec Hall. But Rec Hall brings with it some great positives, and it brings with it a couple of things where you sit back and go, who was thinking about this? Rec Hall is great on the sidelines. I mean, the comparable to the Palestra on the sidelines. But the end zones at Rec Hall are terrible. Wide open spaces, distance between the baseline and the stand. It's like, ugh, who the heck thought of that?
My only memory of Rec Hall is trying to get around that top press area up at the top, and that was
on the track.
Yeah.
On the track,
yeah.
Well, you can't get in there now. I mean, you need like 12 keys to get in. All right, they're going to play a game with Illinois in there next month. And again, Rec Hall's really good. I don't want to hear great, terrific. But as a building design, the sidelines are great. The end zones make subpar look like a step up the ladder. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back more in a moment. Great to have you with us today as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Prudy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They'll make sure that you're fully insured, critical. They'll also make sure along the way that they'll do everything they can to save you money. Great combination. When somebody cares that much about you as the customer, they go the extra mile for you. Customer service means everything to the great people at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. We'll be talking with John Griffin in this half hour. Looking forward to that. John's always great to talk to about his team right now, even at 1-1 in the Patriot. And we can talk about overall records, but it is critical that in the conference, in the Patriot, that's where it really in the end counts. And they've got Lehigh coming up in Bethlehem on Wednesday.
Steve, I have him.
Great. Thank you, Todd.
You're quite welcome. Here he comes.
John, Happy New Year to you, my friend. Great to have you back.
Steve, you too. Happy New Year. Hope all is well.
Doing great. And so you beat Holy Cross. So right now you're 1-1 in conference play. 1-1.
Correct.
If I were to have told you before the Holy Cross game that Williamson and Forrest are going to go 5-for-18 combined, I'm sure it would be like, oh, let's see what happens. But what does it tell us about the growth and maturity of your team that two key parts can have a combined 5-for-18 and you win the game going away by 12?
Yeah, to your thought right there, if you were to tell me that, I probably would have had that exact follow-up. We'll see what happens. But what it really tells me and our staff right now is that our group is building confidence in each other inside this locker room, that we can win games in different types of ways. And I think when... You know, the one thing that we're building on, that we've been building on since October, is ultimately creating a culture that's not dependent on making shots in order to win basketball games. It's dependent on defending, rebounding, taking, and not turning the ball over. And we're getting there. We just had a little bump in the road here at home versus American, but Holy Cross was a great showing for us in that we didn't shoot the ball particularly well, especially in the first 15 minutes. And from an attitude standpoint, we were very much locked in. I didn't see any, I would say, scared faces, as they say. Everyone was just in tune with staying true to who we are. And I was really happy about that attitude for 40 minutes.
You have Elvin Edmonds and you have Josh Basco. Sometimes two guys that are supposed to be the lead guard and handle it, can they work together? What has allowed the two of them to work together in that backcourt for you?
Well, I think they're still figuring that part of it out. They both trust one another, and both of them can handle the ball as the primary ball handler. throughout the course of possession. So what's happened a couple times now in the non-conference in the last couple games leading into now the Patriot League is teams are pressing us. So having two ball handlers on the floor gives us a little bit more firepower going up the floor versus the press as opposed to being on our heels. And now these two guys are still learning how to find each other on the floor as well as be aggressive for themselves and include the rest of the group. You know, Elvin was hurt for a large portion of the non-conference, so these two guys playing together is something new for them in their careers, and they're kind of just learning each other, but at the same time learning how they can be impactful together as a two-headed, aggressive, ball-handling monster and get everyone else involved.
All right, so the American game was a bump in the road for you, but you had to, to me, it's something to overcome. Your stretch where you're not playing, I know we had talked earlier about how you grouped all those games before finals, but there's a long period of time where you don't play. What did, did it take for you to just to get back and get some rhythm again?
I mean, it didn't take much. I mean, we got right back into the swing of things with Radford, who's a really good team, and we played a good basketball game. You know, we played a good basketball game. Merrimack was a bad first 20 minutes, a good second 20 minutes, and then we play St. Peter's, who's 4-0 in the MAC right now, and we played a good basketball game then as well. And really what's happening a little bit, and it happened again the other night against American, is more of the fact that this is just it's invaluable experience that this group collectively is gaining. You know, a great example of the inexperience right now that these guys are fighting to overcome is we just played our second game of the Patriot League versus American. Last year, the second game of the Patriot League, Rue Bijek, who's our starting forward, played 3 minutes, and Noah Williamson, who's our starting center, played 0 minutes.
Right.
Josh Bosco, who's our starting point guard, played 8 minutes last year.
Right.
So this isn't that long ago for these guys to have played 0 minutes. For sure, I make them aware, like, hey, there is a learning curve to this, so it's not all going to be perfect. But what happens sometimes in the stretch of these games is we're looking for answers, like from the staff, from the scheme, and the answers is just them playing with confidence, doing they do within our structure. And when they grab hold of that, the personality and the trajectory of this group will hopefully go in the direction that, as a staff, internally we think it can go. But until then, we're going to have some of these lulls in scoring, and then it's going to require so much physical and mental energy to make sure that the opponent doesn't score as well. And so you're seeing low scores for us in these first two conference games in the first half because we're not making shots that I think we're capable of making. But really it just comes down to gaining this incredible experience and then trying to expedite a little bit the process and give these guys confidence that they actually have the ability to make the plays to win.
Yeah, it's seriously, the first class, broadcast class was today for the spring semester. I talked to them about the first thing. I said, the key to this profession's confidence. Well, that's the key to any profession, all right? And that includes being a basketball player, confidence. The two of you have both played American. American beat Lehigh as well. You'll get another shot later. This would be obviously a game where I've seen both teams live. So I've seen both Lehigh and you. When you look at a player like Higgins, a player I like, a lot of players on your team I like, but what about a guy like Higgins, a 15-point-a-game guy? You know, what does it take to defend a guy like that so that you would make sure that he's not getting 30, but he's getting maybe 10 to 12?
Yeah, I mean, they have a couple guards, which I'm sure, like you said, you saw them that you saw them live and personal. They're capable. They have guards that are capable of making plays, regardless of screens and any schematic situation offensively. So that always becomes dangerous. A guy like Higgins, what you have to do is make sure that his tummy, when he touches the ball, there's some level of discomfort before he gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he gets it, he sees a crowd, and he's constantly feeling like there's no space for him to make plays. And, you know, being that he's a junior and they have other players that are very capable, you know, they're a dangerous team. They're a really dangerous team in our league. Brett Reed's been in the league longer than anybody to know how to get his teams playing well at the right time. But he is exceptionally good when he has guards that are capable of making plays. And right now they have a team that's capable of that. So it's going to be quite the challenge for us because I think, similar to us, I think versus American, a couple shots go in, a couple in timely stretches, the game might go a different way.
You win, yeah. John, how complicated are you systematically with your team right now? In other words, sometimes simple is what works. Sometimes complicated works. Where are you in that stage right now?
For us, you know, there's just a lot of things that we are working towards improving. So as it relates to the scheme, we're probably somewhere in the middle. When we're at our best, we're executing and making it look simple. When we're at our worst, we're overthinking and making the simple look complex. Yeah. That's the coach's way of saying is I just have to get these guys competent in their ability to execute anything that we have schematically. That being said, you know, some of the teams that we're playing have advantages from an experience and points per game standpoint in certain positions. So we just have to do things that will give us a little bit better of a chance schematically to win these games. In the last game, for example, American has first team all league preseason big man, and we did a decent job of limiting his touches, limiting his ability to get the ball near the rim, and he hurt us down the stretch with two threes, but aside from that we did a good job, and I thought that was because we kept it simple and just trying not to let him get the ball.
Right. No, exactly. When you played, how much did coaches talk to you, like, and how much do you feel like you have to talk to your players now? Different era, different way of doing things.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah. Do you find yourself talking to your players, just talking to them, not coaching them or lecturing, but talking to them more than you were talked to when you played?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do think in today's world of high-level athletics, college athletics is high level no matter what division you're in. There is a relationship element that's required. You do have to extend beyond the game. And to a certain extent, being that I'm a son of a coach and Pat Flannery, who was the head coach here, they always went above and beyond because at the end of the day, right, when you're a coach, you're here to impact lives positively. You got to do it beyond the lines outside of the game. But at the same time, you know, today's world is a little bit more built on relationships, and you have to get buy-in through trust, through sweat equity, and through conversation. And the conversation can't always be built around making and missing shots because there's so much more to life than that, and that's kind of what's evolved. It's been part of the evolution of coaching is you realize that life goes on, and you want to make sure that your players are prepared for when the ball or stops bouncing in this case, but also they trust you and they trust your intention so that they can just completely buy in and you know, do what they need to do to help the team win.
I mean, you're a younger coach. It's got to help you at least in some way relate to these players. As time goes, are you always going to want to make sure, are you going to be one of those that feels like he's going to need to have at least one coach that's younger, that's more relatable to the era?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I have three young boys, and because of their ages, I will be in tune with the trends of the younger worlds for years to come. And at the same time, you know, the non-basketball mind for myself is very entrepreneurial. So I enjoy learning about the world and the trends and, you know, all the things that are popular. It's a kind of a vice for me, and that's an advantage in this case. But at the same time, I also, from a coaching standpoint, my first job was the NBA video coordinator. So
that's
when
right.
it comes to teaching, I use video a lot, and I really – the video that I use is not always Bucknell basketball. Right. A lot of times it's players that our players can relate to, whether it be Kevin Durant not necessarily making shots, more his physicality defensively that is completely underrated, or you know, we have a European center. So you look at Jokic, for example, who's the MVP, but his change of speeds on his cuts on offense, you know, it's something that at least what I learned at a young age, if you wanted to be a good player, you would go out and work on your game, but you would watch the Michael Jordans and the Allen Iversons and, you know, Steve Nash, and then you try to replicate what you saw.
Right.
And the same goes now. I just use what I know in the world of video coordinator to present it in a fashion where hopefully our players can learn and try to emulate that on the floor.
Yeah, it's interesting because Jokic's name came up the other night because we were talking with Jalen Pickett, who's with the Nuggets. He said, here's the part video-wise you can't replicate. He said, Jokic has that face where you kind of wonder how much he cares out there. He says, there's nobody that competes, like, wants it so badly that he does. And that's from a teammate saying that. So it's,
yeah, I mean, that's quickly noticable.
Yeah. You could, it's quickly noticeable.
I mean, he carries a good persona, but in order to have the success that he's had, his attitude has to be so far in terms of the competitiveness that that's the only way he can be consistent, because ultimately there is that intangible in sports, and especially in that world, having lived it and seen it. If you're not competitive, it'll show itself in times of adversity, but also when you need to be your most poised and confident self. And but for us, it's a way for me to teach, because I know all these players, all these high school kids in college, because they watch the NBA. But they only watch, for the most part, the makes and the Kyrie Irving flashy finishes. But they don't watch Kyrie Irving spending 25 minutes a day dribbling the basketball and making mistakes. I've seen it. I've seen a pregame warm-up that's not the 20 minutes that you see on Twitter or YouTube. I've seen the mistakes, and I've seen how intense these NBA players are as it relates to improving themselves. So I try to just pass that along, and hopefully it sticks.
John, always a pleasure. Good luck at Lehigh coming up on Wednesday. Yeah. It's great to have
you
back on the show.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, John. John Griffin, the outstanding basketball coach at Bucknell. I'll tell you, okay. So all you guys know, I've said it before. You guys hired a winner in John. You really did. You hired a winner in that guy. We'll come back. More in a moment. Pearls of wisdom from Todd. I'm going to assume the suit's out of the building.
Haven't seen him.
That's the suit on drums.
Never knew he played drums.
Neither did he. Just tripped and all of a sudden it happened, so we recorded it.
Eh. Kind of like Step Brothers.
That's right. So going into the playoffs, the Steelers are the best team in Pennsylvania. Words I didn't think I would say. The Steelers are in the playoffs with Mason Rudolph at quarterback. Again, words I didn't think I would say. It's like, holy mackerel.
It is amazing to me, especially with the, you know, it just seemed like the Steelers bubble was going to burst, you know, at the beginning of the season when they won all those close games and they went through that slide. Pickett got hurt and they did a, you know, that Tomlin guy might know what he's doing.
Well, they, like the Eagles, lost to the Arizona Cardinals. Like, really? Like, you kind of look at like, what? I know the Cardinals are a little different once you get Kyler Murray back, but still, it's like, egad. It's, you look at, I can't explain how they're 10-7. They've got some good pieces on defense. Not completely perfect, but good pieces on defense. Their offensive line played better, especially utilizing the run. Okay, got it. And then you've got the quarterback situation. Mason Rudolph, has he turned the ball over in three starts? I don't think he has. Has he?
I don't think he has. Mason Rudolph is making himself a boatload of money over the last month.
I mean, it may not be with Pittsburgh, but he's going to make a lot of money. I mean, there's going to be, even if a team is just looking for a really good NFL backup, he's going to make a ton of money. He really is.
I mean, look at some of the guys that started this year. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody decides to hand him the keys in the offseason. I mean, is he playing better than Sam Howell did all year? Probably.
Yeah, he is. It depends all too on how teams draft.
Well, yeah, that's of course.
I mean, that'd be a big part of it too. But like Kenny Pickett could be as healthy as can be, at least today. I'm not starting Kenny Pickett over this guy.
I don't think you can.
Rudolph starting the game. Simple as that. He starts, and it's not even remotely close.
Oh, the way he finds George Pickens, I think George Pickens might find somebody if Kenny Pickett starts.
Well, but again, this is what's so odd about this team. I've got two receivers that in the middle of games quit on me. They quit. Sorry. George Pickens on that play, quit.
Yeah.
I don't block. Oh, yeah, you do, George. It's actually part of what the job is. You're supposed to, at times, not just catch the ball. You're supposed to block. So he quit on you, right? Deontay Johnson fumbled, turned away, quit. So I got two guys like that that have some talent but have shown me that in key moments they'll quit if they're not happy. And I still end up 10-7.
Heck, they won on Saturday and Deontay didn't get off the field quick enough and got a 12-man on the field and the punt.
Right. Again. Okay, again. Your job is to sprint off the field. The world does not wait for you. I mean, those are the kind of mental mistakes that you see exponentially more of today than you saw 20, 30 years ago. Move. Why? It's your job.